Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files podcast, the podcast that would like to be taken over your knee and spanked. I'm one of your hosts, John Bruford, with your other host, Fintan Costello. For anybody watching in black and white who's struggling to tell us apart, I'm the one in the red t-shirt. Fintan, hello.
I'm definitely a cuddler, John. Please don't spank me. That's not my thing.
Well, no, see, I had an incident at the weekend.
Did we know?
I was party to some car park rage.
Really?
I was, yeah. Yeah. So I took two things. One of them was a guy being passive aggressive, and it was one of those moments where you just think, if I didn't have the kids with me, I'd pull you off your midlife crisis Vespa and ask if you'd like to fucking repeat that. But I do have the kids with me. So let's just go into the supermarket, kids, and never mind the silly man. But then when we were coming out of the super, so I get the kids in the van, all fine. This guy pulls up in the space next to us. I pull out. As I'm pulling out, I notice that the guy is probably in his 70s.
Oh, okay.
And has no children with him. We've pulled out of parent and child parking spaces.
So it's the wider space. So you've got room to get kids in and out and all that kind of stuff. Or push chairs and these kinds of things. Yeah,
it's a very large car park, to be fair. And there are plenty of spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things that I really hate. So I do it in the evening.
I'm completely with you.
It makes my... So I slow down. I see the guy. I slow down. I go, excuse me, mate. You've just pulled into a parent and child space there. And he goes, what? You've just pulled into a parent and child space. I'm speaking real clear. And the guy's like, what? And he walks over. And that should have been my first warning sign.
Because
he's on my son's side of the van, not on my side.
Oh, no.
Luckily, he wasn't aggressive to my son. And he didn't touch my son, or we would be having a very different conversation now. But he goes, I don't know if you noticed, but I swung the door very wide to get out of the car because I had some difficulty getting out because I've just had both my knees replaced. So there's my fucking bullshit alert going off straight away because they never do both your knees at the same time.
Was he on a...
Ever.
Walker and...
No. They never do both your knees at the same time, ever, in any circumstance. It just doesn't happen because you can't walk.
Yeah, you can't get the physio. You can't,
You can't do a fucking thing. So my bullshit meter's going ding, 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 ding. So, you know, you think you should, mind your own business a bit. I'm like, well, you're in a parent and child space. And sure, you know, maybe you do have some infirmity. I don't know. Anyway, he then escalated it and got very sweary, threatened me with violence. He actually threatened to take me across his knee and spank me, then remembered himself and said, and I've got bad knees. And I'm like, are you sure that's how that would turn out? Are you absolutely sure that that would go that way? Really? But the part that really made it for me was when he said, if you get out of that van, I'll put you across my knee and spank you. And all of my kids just burst out laughing at him.
Do it! Get him!
He's going to spank you! Oh, man. But then later on, Annie was really down. And I said, are you okay? And she said, actually, I don't like it when people argue. I didn't like what that man said.
And that's the thing, it'll have the next time they go to the car park, they're going to get a bit anxious. It has
maybe,
a huge impact on
maybe. And I said to the kids, I said, look, he was trying his luck because he knew that I had my kids with me. There's no way that he's going to say that to me if I'm on my own, not a chance in hell. And I said, kids, if we see him again, I don't want you to worry. I'm just going to say one thing to you and it'll all be fine. What's that, Dad? I'm going to say, kids, close your eyes. The thing is, and I explain this to the kids, people become embarrassed when you point out that they're acting like pricks.
Yeah.
And that embarrassment manifests itself in anger. So yeah. That was a guy saying to me, I know I've been a prick, but I'm going to double down on it by trying to make you feel bad because my bad knees. It's funny. But we're driving away. My son, as we're driving away, my son just goes, if he's got two bad knees, how's he driving?
How's he walking? But great. But what I have found is in those situations, the whole thing, obviously they get defensive, they go on the attack, and it's horrible. But next time he pulls into that car park, he's probably going to pick a regular space.
Certainly hope so, because otherwise I'm going to egg his car. Not that I would actually do that, because this is being recorded.
Your Honor. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So, it was interesting. So I ignored some of my policies. Normally in that kind of situation, I would just say to the guy, did I hurt your feelings? But he went from 0 to 100 so fast. And like I say, my son was between me and him that I just thought, do you know
what? Yeah, look, everyone's monkey brain kicks in at that point. I'd have kicked his fucking monkey brain in.
So good times. Good time. I think a good time was had by everybody.
Who
had a good time? Who? Oh.
Well, not having a good time. I was reading The Guardian at the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Article by Rob Davies, friend of the podcast.
Wait, he had two in The Observer, I think, last weekend.
Oh, did he? I didn't see that one. But I did see the one with Teddy Sagi suing the guys behind In Touch Games.
Yeah, I saw that.
Some amazing quotes in that. Alleged amazing quotes.
Presumably, wow. The guy that sold him the business is giving his evidence via a video link from a country with no extradition treaty. Because that's where I'd be.
it's amazing it's gone to court. You think everybody would just want this to just go away and just not talk about it in public.
They're doubling down on it because they're angry car park people.
Yeah, 53 million.
That does sound like quite a lot to me.
It's a lot of money.
I do think it's quite a lot. I mean, you could buy a premium bonus finder for that, I would think.
Nearly.
Or you buy an up-and-coming bonus finder. Well, I don't think those figures were ever made public.
Oh, funny. How we laughed.
But maybe now be a good time because, I mean, I think there's a degree of reputation management that's needed in the wake of things like this. Maybe it'd be worth contacting the two parties and saying that sponsorships are available of the industry's leading podcast, The Gambling Files.
That is true.
Because if nothing else, we're good at managing, profiles, elevating profiles. Like our superstar guest this week, Melanie Ellis. I mean, I'm not going to say that we made Mel. We're not some kind of Svengali podcast.
No, stop. Stop. No. No, stop it.
What?
No. She's too good for us. She made us.
She is. That's very fair. It's very fair.
Let's not get carried away here.
But it does give us a good opportunity to discuss this week's guest, which is Melanie Ellis of Northridge Law.
Absolutely.
Talking about the shitty mess of statistics and things in the UK industry at the moment. It is an interesting conversation. I'm a little biased.
She corrects both of us and
multiple times.
Multiple times.
No, just me.
No. We both made mistakes. But you know, that's why we bring on experts to learn, open our minds,
truth,
new data, new insights. So we're talking about the statistics, the what's going on there, implications. Mel goes into, I think, the quite interesting one is the. It's not the headline like 2.5%. It's the markers of harm for, say, slots is much higher than you'd expect. And I think there's some really interesting stuff there if I was a casino operator in the UK that I'd be very concerned about and trying to get ahead of, because that's not going to go away. But yeah, Mel's wonderful and really glad she could had some time for us.
She also brings up that thing about pandas doing handstands and pissing, which surprised me.
She just went straight for it. It was amazing.
She really did. She's like, lads, have you heard this?
But she also, she had her gambling files mug, which I was very happy.
She did. She did. So anybody that's just listening, you're going to miss that on the video.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she was using it. It actually had liquid in.
It was real. It wasn't just like prop drinking. She was really drinking from it. You could tell. You could tell.
Yeah.
So that was great.
Do you think we should do a gambling files pint glass?
What we could do is we could jump on that Guinness trend of splitting the G. We could do our own G, but we move it down the pint glass. And we just have it like, rather than like the top third, bottom third maybe.
Yeah, make it more of a challenge.
Make it a real drink. Real firsts up. And that could work.
You know, the kind of glass that would be made by an Irishman and a drunk.
you know what we could do then is we could extend it. We do like a dotted line all the way around, because like I'm in a couple of conversations with a few mates where we send each other photos of it, and it gets very technical if it's on the line, off the line, bang on the line. And so we could have like an equator type line all the way around the glass. It could be
interesting. That would solve a lot of arguments.
I think so. Highly collectible as well.
Yeah.
I'll see what's on the website and see what I can do.
Well, you know, it would be interesting. We could do a sponsor-endorsed thing and take it to, say, ICE or wherever. And
talking of ICE. Well, you don't really get... Talking of ICE.
ICE?
ICE Barcelona 2025.
I've heard of it.
It's on the way.
It is, yeah.
So it is. Just
it's really, recovered. It's really... like, what's it going to be, like 6 and a bit months away?
20th of January.
No time at all.
August, September, October, November.
But of course, in between now and then, we've got the first BACTA event at EAG for the British casino industry.
Never heard of it. No idea what that is.
Well, BACTA represents sort of amusement and street gaming.
Oh, okay.
And as part of the EAG's, like, it's a very good show. Genuinely, it's a very, very good show.
Have they got the claw machines?
Oh, they got all of that shit.
Oh, I love that.
They got loads. I mean, it's sort of.
I've been watching these videos on TikToks of guys just nailing claw machines, and you're like, how are they doing?
Really?
That? Yeah, it's amazing. Or those coin pushers. You know those kind of coin pusher things where they've created like these elaborate towers?
It's very
interesting. It's very compelling. Very compelling. They did a big crash and stuff. It's cool.
Jesus.
Too much time on hands.
But they've announced a British casino industry area in their event for next year. It's middle of January. It's at Excel as well.
Oh, okay.
Just for the British industry, because I mean there are things that are fairly unique to the British industry. There's also the expanded number of slots that the industry should be getting. But I mean, and I think I made this point in one of my newsletters that, you know, I think there's only like 4 slot suppliers to the UK industry because the market's so small. And so they're all, you know, they're all fairly big companies, you know, I mean, Novomatic's one of the big ones, et cetera. But I mean, ICE back in the day was sort of fed on the exhibitor side by slot manufacturers or slot suppliers and on the visitor side by international visitors. So what you've got essentially is a new show that has neither of those things.
Mm.
So I'm really hopeful that they're going to put big focus on a conference program, because I think there's great potential for a very specialist conference program for the UK. I think it could be very, very cool. And I mean, it is a good idea that, you know, the British industry, there's still 120 odd casinos. Although obviously some of those
would they all not just go to ICE and just Would you not just go to ICE and just get everything? I don't get
that. Well, no, this has a land-based focus.
So it's just land-based?
I think that's what it said. Mm. If I'm wrong and they want to sponsor the podcast. No, we can't do that. Do you know why we can't do that?
Because we're sponsored by Clarion.
That's right. We're sponsored by Clarion. Clarion Events.
And we're loyal. Clarion Events. We're loyal. As long as the check clears, we're loyal.
That's a good point. I'll just check my balance. Hold on.
you know who else we're sponsored by, John?
Who else are we sponsored by, Fenton? Do you use Face ID on your phone? Have you got an iPhone?
I've got Android, but it's got a Face ID thing. Yeah.
Do you use Face ID?
But it's also got a fingerprint thing. Yeah, sort of, but I prefer the fingerprint. It's just quicker. Particularly in the dark when I'm like in bed trying to read my kind of thing. You know, it's
mine doesn't recognize me if I'm smiling.
Well.
Tells you everything about my life, doesn't it?
You know you can take more pictures, right? You can just add to your thing.
Why would I take a picture of myself smiling?
On the off chance, so you can log into your phone. Same way you can add the fingerprints and stuff. Just you can add more pictures of you doing different facial expressions and stuff.
Feels like a bit of a reach.
Talking of learning.
Learning.
Talking of learning and data and AI. Are also sponsored by Optimove.
Gambling Industries. I've heard that they're the leading CRM software supplier to the iGaming industry. Is that correct?
Over 50% of the Power 50 use Optimove for their CRM needs. And they're a great bunch. Lots of data, really smart tools. There'll be a link in the description below. Blah, blah, blah. Click it, book the demo. Just go get the demo, have a look. Tell them
we've got a stats episode with them coming soon as well, which I'm sure is very interesting.
Yeah, it was because I had to fly solo. I had to pretend and fake some football knowledge, which was quite fun. And no, it was another John. So it was still Fintan and John, which is quite funny. And John came back for round two, but we'll talk about that later. It was really good fun.
Oh, yeah, I can't talk about it now because now we've got Mel.
Oh, it'd be a bit weird. We've got weird. Exactly.
It would be confusing.
It would.
But let's go and see Mel. We're joined by number one superstar guest, returning guest,
friend of the podcast.
We could say friend of the, but Fenton, we should probably say friend to podcasts because Mel is, of course, friends with other podcasts.
That's allowed. It's an open podcast relationship, John. This is totally fine.
As long as she's fully present when she's with us, you mean?
I'd expect nothing less from Mel.
You still have to set boundaries in these things, though, Fenton.
Fair enough.
There is only one podcast that sent me a mug.
That is true. Bonus points if you have it to hand right now and can hold it up to the camera.
Looks around, panic.
Gosh, there we go. Nailed it. Come on.
And it's got liquid in. She's using it.
You too could have a Gambling Files podcast mug if you email Fintan and ask nicely.
Or come on the podcast. That could work too.
Yeah.
But I've still got a couple of, hang on. I've still got some laptop stickers. You call them laptop stickers, Fenton, but I've discovered that they stick to many things.
Okay.
It's just a good one. I find that all children look similar. So I stick one on the back of a child's head and they're much easier to find.
That one's yours.
Yeah, basically.
I do that when my son was smaller and we'd go to a theme park or something, an orange baseball hat would stick on him so I could spot him in the crowd.
It's a good idea.
I'm lucky because both my kids have ginger hair, so they're always quite easy to spot.
Built-in orange baseball caps. I like it.
The flip side of that, Mel, is you say lucky.
Oh, stop.
They're very Jesus cute. Christ.
No, I'm sure they are. And I was going to say a lot cuter than mine, but that's impossible. But probably, we probably both have children that are cuter than Fintan's.
Mine right now, it's brilliant. He's set up a new YouTube account and he's only filling it with one type of content because he wants to figure out what the optimal title for a YouTube video for that segment and thumbnails. And this is his little summer project that he's working on. So he's doing some social media for me right now. It's very impressive. Very impressive.
He's re-engineering YouTube. That's terrifying.
And he's using ChatGPT to do it. It's brilliant. I'm so excited.
Wow.
Did you set him this to do? Or is he just like, yeah.
Oh, no. He wanted to, we always pick a summer project. So I've given him some work to do. And he's my new social media manager. It's brilliant.
Wow. Yeah. That is a little bit terrifying though as well.
Fair enough. But it's no different than learning, like when I was his age, or a little bit older, I was learning HTML. It's the same thing. It's just different tech.
God, I remember learning HTML. I had one of those books. It was like learn HTML in 7 days.
Yeah. HTML for dummies.
But the book was like this thick. It was like 600 odd pages. And I'm like, I'm not reading that in a week. So I feel that they fell at the first hurdle and they let me down. But anyway, Mel, listen, we did actually get you here to discuss something about the gambling industry.
No way.
Because there's this thing that's everything's kicked off in the UK about this in a big way.
Oh, not again. What are they moaning about now?
Statistics, Fintan. They're moaning about statistics.
Lies, damn lies and statistics.
Yeah, pretty much. But, I mean, it really has kicked off and it's – I don't even know where to start with it. Could you give us a bit of background, please, Mel?
Okay, so the Gambling Commission has always, well, for a long time at least, collected statistics about – rates of participation in gambling and rates of problem gambling, in particular using the PGSI scale. So they're determining whether somebody's a problem gambler by their score on this scale. And they used to do this with a telephone survey method. So they just phone people up at random, I suppose, and ask them various questions about their gambling behaviours and these questions on the PGSI scale. The NHS has also got involved and it includes gambling questions and these PGSI problem gambling questions in its health survey, which it conducts from time to time. So it's the rates of problem gambling from both of these surveys have been pretty stable over the years, if anything, very slightly coming down. So most recently, the telephone survey found about 0.2% of the respondents, so 0.2% of the population, I suppose, are people who suffer from problem gambling. And the NHS had found a rate of about 0.3% of the population suffering from problem gambling. Then the Gambling Commission decided, I believe, that its telephone survey was getting quite expensive to run. They felt that they needed to sort of get with the modern age and do an online, or it's called a push to web method. So for a number of years, they've been developing this new survey methodology. So now they write to people and ask them to complete a survey online. They also give them the option to fill in a paper survey and send that back if they don't, for whatever reason, want or can't do it online. So they've done a few experimental stages of this new survey, and now they've sort of finally launched the final version where they have now made this the official statistics for problem gambling and the other things they're measuring, whereas that used to be NHS statistics that were the official ones. So, yeah, now we have sort of a new problem gambling rate, I suppose, which is 2.5%. Although the Commission have been quite cautious about this. It's a new methodology. And they appreciate that there are risks that it's not getting an accurate figure. So they have released some guidance to say, look, these figures we found, you need to use them with caution. You shouldn't be comparing this 2.5% with the previous 0.2%, 0.3%, sure, to in any way conclude that rates of problem gambling have gone up. So that's where we are in a nutshell.
So how many people in the survey, you know?
It was around or just under 10,000 people that responded to the survey. And I think it was around 18% response rate they got. So they sent it to a lot more.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
So it was about 2,000 before, wasn't it?
So just under 10,000 responded out. Oh, sorry. Are you talking about the telephone ones they did?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was about 2,000 people.
The numbers were lower. I guess it's just you need a big team of people if you're going to have that telephone conversation with a lot. So,
but you've also
the benefit of
But they're kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't, right? So, if they do 2,000 people on a telephone survey, people will complain that it's not enough people. And, it's a telephone survey, so that's only old people answer the phone because it doesn't work on mobile or something. John, have you got a landline?
Yes.
Point proof. Fair enough.
Don't attack me just because I'm over 50 now.
Is that bus? Is that when you get the bus pass?
I'm fucking protected by law now. You can't pick on me.
Like
it's
a
elder,
panda.
Elder abuse.
Did you compare it to a panda?
Yeah, well, like the pandas should be extinct, right? They're just stupid. Like if you watch all these panda videos, you're just like. However, my son dropped a fun panda fact on me.
Brilliant.
Right, so they mark their territory with urine.
Don't will.
To assert dominance over the other pandas, they will do a handstand and then have their wee because it's higher on the tree or whatever the thing they're marking. So they do upside down, they do handstand wees to get a higher thing, which makes them seem like a bigger panda. Fun fact. I haven't gone into the logistics of it. It's just such a fun story. I'm just going to run with it, but it seems hilarious. So I'm just going to have just like this poor panda upside down covered in wee because he's trying to do it upside down and it's just
I respect them a lot more than I did before you told that story though. Because before I've always gotten hung up on the old crappy diet so they can't hibernate thing.
That to us like the koalas, right?
I think that's bears. The male pandas, is it? Because I feel like as a female,
the female pandas are just too sensible and just don't play those silly games and are busy.
Well,
doing
I think they really like if I try and do a wee, I'm doing a handstand. That's not gonna, it's not gonna go well, is it?
It's not gonna go well, is it, Mel?
It feels like a one-handed handstand seems optimistic. Like there's a lot going on that I haven't got into, but I'll have to find video for. I'll have to verify. Because he could just be winding me up.
I do think that warrants a good YouTube search, Fintan.
Full algorithm, deep dive, ultimate panda headline and thumbnail. Let's go. So I always think the UK Gambling Commission's completely, they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't, right? So they had a telephone survey, 2,000 people run by the NHS, and everybody complained. It was wrong. It was flawed. It wasn't enough. It was this. It was that. These kind of things. Doesn't help that the, BGC? Yeah. Like, would throw out a press release a bit optimistically when the numbers would go up or down, or would go down. And then, like, lads, if you go to like 4 decimal points, you'll see this is all meaningless in the spreadsheet.
As revealed on this podcast.
Live fact checking. Now they've done 10,000, and not to like name drop him, but I was speaking with a national UK journalist the other day about something, and we were talking about surveys. And as far as she was concerned, I know, I move in circles now. And as far as she was concerned, like a 10,000 people survey was like the gold standard. Like this was just fantastic. Like if somebody showed up to her door with 10,000 people on a survey, national representative, she'd be very, very happy and very comfortable. As obviously you need to check the questions and stuff. So everything I've seen online is this sucks. This is wrong. This is bad. The Gambling Commission is trying to destroy gambling. And it seems they're trying to create a new baseline start. Like, and you know, like you said, you read the notes that they put out of like, mm-hmm. you can't compare and contrast these. Mm-hmm. We're not saying it's gone up. It's just this methodology, this is the number.
We just measure it differently.
And like science is like, hey, we're just trucking. We're using new methodology now. So we're creating a baseline. Mm-hmm. And we'll measure from the baseline over time and da, 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 da. But it seems like for some, it's just wrong. And then for others, it's still not enough and the number's too low. And it does feel like the science bit is being, there's so much emotion. The science bit is being lost in this. And surveying people is one of the toughest things to do scientifically because we're all liars ultimately, right? Well, as a marketer, right? If you say, oh, why did you choose this product? We'll make up a story that makes us sound good as to why. Oh, it was the price. I definitely checked pricing and this was the best price one, or safety, or it's like we'll create something real rather than, well, actually, David Beckham endorsed, and I really like David Beckham.
It got the shit stains out of my jeans better after I had a shard incident at a barbecue. Nobody's going to answer that except me.
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to be a tick box.
Yeah. Yeah, a few things there. So firstly, the NHS survey was a separate beast to the Gambling Commission's telephone survey. Mm. So the NHS, when they do their health surveys, they have a sort of a long booklet that people fill out by paper, and some of those questions were on gambling. And I believe that has a similar number of respondents, at least, to the Commission's new survey. I'd have to check the figures. Another benefit of the health survey is it has a much higher response rate. So on average, I think it's been around 50% of people over the years have actually agreed to complete this survey, compared to your sort of 18-ish, I think, percent with the new gambling survey. And I think what the difference is and what that tells us is most people are choosing not to complete this survey from the Gambling Commission, probably because it's not a subject they're interested in. Maybe they're not particularly somebody who gambles. They don't have any strong feelings about gambling, so they just put that in the recycling, leaving those 18% to be maybe people who have strong feelings about gambling, or just people who are, you know, they're regular gamblers. They gamble a lot. It's a topic that interests them, so they say, yeah, I'll do that survey. Whereas the NHS survey is about health. It's not particularly going to attract or detract people because of their interest or participation in gambling. So from that respect, I would sort of immediately think the NHS survey is going to give us a more representative type of result.
Yeah.
And whereas a gambling survey, and I think the commission, you know, admits that there probably is some self-selection bias going on here. And that was picked up by Professor Patrick Sturgis, who did a review of the previous experimental stage. So that's the issue that we have. And I do appreciate the comments about, you know, we need to come up with a new method and we have to take on board that there may be some differences in the data. But I do feel that such a different result has come out of this survey than a lot of other surveys that have been done before, that, you know, somebody needs to think, well, hang on a minute, something's funny here. Is it that all of our previous surveys are really underestimating the rates of problem gambling, in which case, you know, let's have a think about what might have been going wrong with those surveys? Or is our new survey really overestimating the rates? In which case, you know, as the commissioner said in its guidance, in which case we need to use those results with caution. But I would say if you're having that level of caution about the figures, you're not yet confident that we now have got the right rates of problem gambling, why are we making these now the official statistics rather than keeping that for now as the NHS survey, which is, you know, the commission previously called that the gold standard. So I think, yeah, that's probably where I come down on it, that I accept a need for a new method, but I don't think it's there yet in terms of our confidence in it to call that the official rate of problem gambling.
Do you think maybe it might have been a more interesting thing if they had just done it for 2 or 3 years and then come out with it? And because then they can come out and say, well, these are the people that responded, these are the kind of people that this is the demographic. And then they'll have a much better idea of what that data means as well, because the integrity of any survey is, it, you know, it's all about who you've asked, right? So, like, I remember there was an American Gaming Association survey which was fucking shocking. I mean, it was just dreadful. And the only methodology I could find about this, I mean, this is, they should be so embarrassed to have done this. The only methodology I could find said that they polled something like 178 people over the age of 18 in North America. That was all the demographic information that was in the methodology. And I'm like,
who are these people?
I've done more robust ones about hot dogs.
I say that it's a completely worthless survey as soon as anybody gives it the vaguest scrutiny. So that demographic, those people that are answering, are really, really important. But of course, the first one is going to be different to the second one and the third one. So you kind of wonder if that, and I know it costs money to do these things, but to do 2 or 3 of them, then you'll see if there's a pattern emerging and if it's good or bad idea.
The problem with that is pure politics, because if it leaked or there was a rumor that there was a secret gambling commission survey with a higher gambling rate, gambling addiction rate that hadn't been released,
industry
then would it
crucified.
Would be full on conspiracy theory, suppression,
But you could say, look, this is what we're doing, but we're waiting until we have an actual baseline.
So they did a few experimental stages. They've done some pilot stages, some experimental stages. I think they started off maybe it's about 1.8% rate they found, and then it went up to 2.5. So it's not that they haven't been through and tested it. I think it's just that the method that they're using is producing much higher.
I'm not saying to test it. I'm saying to have meaningful data that shows progression or not over time, and whether this is viable as a long term thing. Because as long as it's first year, it's you know, it's like everybody watches the first episode of a new series. They don't always watch the second one.
But if it's like close to 10,000 people, nationally representative, it's as good as, and like, okay, the NHS survey is the gold standard, I guess, because it would be presented to people as, please help us fill in the survey. It helps the NHS. Mm-hmm. And that kind of cuts through a lot with people, and they'll happily commit the 30 minutes, whatever it's going to take, to tick the various boxes.
They may have been more honest.
Because it's like talking to a doctor type of thing, right? So that makes sense as the gold standard. So if the gold standard is saying it's 0.2, and then this survey is saying it's 2.5 or whatever the number was, you're like, all right, but you've got a range, and it's still not like, okay, it's a number, it's a lot of people, it's a lot of lives. But it's still within the context of, it's a range. There's been lots of estimates floating around for years with these kind of numbers. Like, it's not preposterous. It's not like, oh, it's 50% or something absolutely, like, shut it all down tomorrow. And I suppose with any of these things, like, what happens next? Because, like, here's a great example. Many years ago, lots of different country managers, and every time you get on a call with them, they'd pull the report apart and they'd just start picking holes in metrics. And just like, so you'd have an hour with them and their teams or whatever, and you'd spend 45 minutes of that hour arguing about a calculation methodology for a number, for a KPI or something. every time. And no matter what you did, it was never good enough. And it was always an argument about the methodology. So it's the easiest way to just run down the clock and not have to actually do any work or progress the conversation, right? And they know who they are. And with stuff like this, I feel it's the same thing. It's so easy to just start criticizing and picking holes and doing whatever. And realistically, if it's 0.2 or 2.5 or 5 or 10%, it doesn't matter from a theoretical thing, because it's really, okay, there's a lot of people being affected here, and it's either a small amount or a large amount, and it's about what we do next. So we've got some numbers floating around. Problem gambling's an issue. And it's really a case of, okay, what are we going to do with these numbers and what do we do next? What's the forward-looking stuff rather than us trying to craft this perfect survey, which anybody who does surveys will tell you, and I can hear Sarah already screaming at the thing. Like, it's just, they're always got issues and they're always flawed and they're always directional and it's a grain of salt. Like, we just got to go, okay, it's a barometer, it's in the wind, and here's the travel direction.
I think some of my concerns really start coming in when you look at how they've broken down the numbers for the proportion of people participating in certain gambling activities who are suffering from gambling harm or at risk of gambling harm. And we start getting some very high numbers. Now, maybe it's the case that there is literally that many people using these products who are suffering from harm, in which case that's very concerning, and I would expect that will drive the new government's gambling policy. For example, problem gambling rate of 24.5% of the respondents participating in online slots were classified as problem gamblers. That's almost a quarter of customers. And when you include all the people who were classified as at risk or medium risk as well, you've got more than half of all people using land-based casinos were either suffering gambling harm or at risk of sort of problem gambling. So that I just think those types of numbers, perhaps we can accept the 0.2, 2.5, but those types of numbers of people actually participating in these activities are at risk of problem gambling, then I think somebody is going to want to start taking more serious action than we've had so far. And if those numbers are based on a flawed or a biased methodology, that's kind of quite significant. Ultimately, the results, if they decide, for example, they look at the online slots rate and say, look, that's too high, we just need to ban online slots. The ultimate result of that is people still want to play online slots. They're going to play with your unlicensed operators, and they're inevitably, they're going to suffer much greater harm than they will with the Gambling Commission operators, with limits on online slots and financial risk checks and so on. So I think that's ultimately my concern about the data. And I mentioned Patrick Sturgis earlier in his report on the experimental stage, and he made a number of recommendations of further research and testing that the Gambling Commission should do. As far as I know, they haven't actually completed any of those steps. So, again, it seems maybe if they do all of those steps, they do all that research, and that, they ultimately decide we're confident in these figures, then, at that point, maybe we can start to have some confidence in them, and maybe it would be right to start thinking about policy on the basis of the numbers at that point.
But like, scientists are the worst in the world for that, right? Like, every PhD dissertation, every research paper finishes with, if I had unlimited budget, here's what I'd actually do. There's always a shifting yardstick of recommendation, but I get your point. It's like, it can always be better, right? So if there's a roadmap of, hey, here's how we're going to improve it, here's how we're going to dial it in, we're taking feedback from scientists and we're working with experts. And do you feel like there's a chance that like online slots could be banned?
I hope not. I think that the policymakers will take these survey results with a grain of salt and not take that action, hopefully. But, you know, that...
And would, sorry to cut across, but then would things like, you know, the affordability checks, the you know, everything that's been talked about as part of the white paper, in a way, you know, there's already a lot of recommendations and things in the pipeline or expected to see, which should, in theory, help with this anyway, regardless of, like, tear it all down and start again.
Yeah, and, you know, one important reason for having this data is so that we can implement these, you know, recommendations coming out of the white paper, and then we can look back and say, did these have the effect that we wanted them to have? So you implement a stake limit for online slots, and the rate of problem gambling for that product stays the same, or if it even went up, then you would presumably want to go in and reconsider what you'd done with that stake limit.
Yeah.
You know, should we have it at all? Is it too high? Is it too low? Because it hasn't had any effect on gambling behavior.
I did the interview months ago, but I only filed the article recently with Jennifer Shatley of the Responsible Online Gambling Association in the US, which was formed just a few months ago. And she made that exact same point, Mel, about how, you know, you can enact whatever you like, but that's not the door closing. That's the point at which you monitor it to make sure it's doing what you intend it to do, and then you figure out why. So it's a constant, fluid thing. I think one of the issues that both the UK government has had historically, but it's something that hasn't been alleviated by the presence of the Gambling Commission. I'm not dissing the Gambling Commission when I say this. It's a bureaucratic thing that's present pretty much everywhere. It takes so fucking long for things to happen that, you know, I would love for somebody to approach this and say, you know, to just say to the industry, lads, let's just try something for 6 months and see what happens. You know, give it a go. What's the worst that can happen? Well, let's find out the worst that can happen. But you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying you do that with affordability checks or something as big as that. But
trying to get someone to agree on what's on the lunch menu would be a struggle, right? Collective action like that, where everybody's given up a bit and somebody's given up more than these guys, and these guys are bent. There's not a chance. Not a chance.
I just thought... I guess
getting them all to agree on a sandwich for lunch. Everyone's going to have the same sandwich. That alone, chaos.
Yeah. Look, if you look at the Betting and Gaming Council's code for the affordability or financial risk checks or whatever you want to call it, you can see from that, I think, that everybody's put their oar in, and the only thing they've been able to all agree on is some very high thresholds for carrying out what they call risk assessments on customers at £5,000 spend in a month. So I think, yeah, if you're talking about the industry getting together and agreeing something, it's going to probably be something quite watered down compared to what the Gambling Commission or the government would put in.
Here's a little note about that affordability check thing, though. Say there's a threshold of £5,000 a month, right, which seems very high to me because I am a simple pauper. It won't, or it more than likely will not include, that would just be deposits. That would just be like, if you deposit like your £5,000 in bets in deposited cash, it won't include one money.
No, it's a net deposit, they call it. So it's £5,000 of what you've deposited less what you've withdrawn. So I mean, if you leave the winnings in, then that's the key.
Because that's one of the markers of harm, not withdrawing your winnings. And so that's going to skew all of that. So it's like, yeah, brilliant way around it, but then you're going to have people being flagged as problem players. So damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I was thinking, while you guys were having your very grown-up conversation, I obviously need to bring this down a level, that big win potential for the Betting and Gaming Council, all they need to do now is start making sure they campaign for things to go back to the way they were. And I predict that there will be a press release saying how they are the heroes because they managed to drop the problem gambling statistics in the UK by 2.3% overnight. And we should all be thanking them. God bless you, BGC. God bless you.
I'll be telling you. I don't think they'll do that. Not yet.
I just wanted to mention another sort of way that this data will be used. To your point of, well, it's, you know, just a marker, etc. That remote operators have to, according to the RCCP, have to interact with a percentage of customers that reflects the problem gambling rate for that activity. So it's still, although these are now apparently the official statistics, the LCCP code is still, well, last time I looked, linking to the NHS stats. So, for example, an online slots provider would currently be using the rate of 8.5% of customers of that product that they'll need to interact with. If the Gambling Commission says, right, yep, these are now the official rates for the activities, they're going to have to start interacting with 24.5% of their slots customers, which is going, I mean, that's going to have quite serious implications, I would think, in terms of you'll need more people on the team who are carrying out the interactions, aren't you? So,
buy software, invest in everybody who's selling software for affordability checks and document checks and all those interactions. That's just...
It's a really interesting wrinkle.
That's a potential bonanza for that
industry. So it'll be interesting, if the commission doesn't decide to change the figures to these figures from its own survey, that really raises questions over its confidence in its own data. And if it does decide to do that, I hope they would give operators quite a bit of notice that they're going to do that, because if you have to, suddenly you're doing three times as many interactions, you're going to need some time to... recruit and bring in new software, as you say. So that would be an interesting one.
That would be an interesting one. Yeah, you'd imagine like they're going to back themselves. Yeah, ideally they back themselves, you'd assume, and then in an ideal world there's time to implement it.
I imagine there's quite a lot of operators who are operating quite a tight profit margin at the moment. And
well, if you're a casino only or something like that, that's a huge. It's your entire database, basically.
You're gonna have to make a huge investment. So
wow.
Of course, if they use the right CRM software, that could really help.
That is true. That's true. Big shout out to podcast sponsors OptiMove. Get in there, lads.
Sorry about that. So, Mel, is there anything that we haven't discussed yet that you didn't discuss on the other podcast that you were on? Anything that we can flag as exclusive?
It was shorter. Let me just have a think. We got through quite a lot, but in a short space of time on the other podcast. But I think we've gone into quite a bit more depth here, at least.
Well, you two did. but you know, did you reveal the hair color of your children on the other podcast? Probably not.
No, we didn't talk about pandas at all either. So
it's just upside down pissing pandas, not just pandas.
This is the magic I bring.
It really is. I can see why Google both wanted you and let you go.
They didn't let me go. I quit.
Oh, do they still have you? You're a dumb agent. Quit. Are you researching the gambling industry for Google's entry into it?
Yeah.
Fenton, I've blown your cover. I'm so sorry.
Live odds comparison, the search results. Heard it here first. It's too much hassle. One negative PR line is just completely not worth the hassle for them. It's pretty easy.
I saw something... somebody had posted on LinkedIn earlier, and I thought it was an interesting point, and Fenton alluded to it earlier, that with all of the talk about statistics, whatever that final figure is, the other side of that figure is real people having real problems. Yeah, and, exactly. You know, okay, so the numbers are important in terms of what funding is given and how it's given and how it's distributed and all of that. But, you know, we are talking about actual people.
And the real conversation from the industry should be, how do we get this to zero? And that should be it. Like, anything that's not that, and like, even if you've put on a PR hat around this, just that's what they should be leading with, rather than trying to poke holes in the survey, because it just looks churlish and childish and petty. Whereas, well, like, there's real people. This is harming people. We are selling this product. We are in charge of this product. We're going to get that number to zero. And here is a clear roadmap with milestones and markers and everything we're going to do to get this to zero. And they can take charge of this and own it and make it really easy for government ministers and everybody else to kind of go, right, that's all under control. We're going to go focus on vaping or whatever's next. And it's super simple, but sandwich analogy from earlier on, I don't see it happening.
No, you make very fair points there. But as I've said before, you know, until you remove quarterly earnings reports out of the picture, then it's always going to be short-term decisions across the board. You know, there's plenty of research saying, look after your players and you'll have a more valuable relationship with them long-term. But you're not going to get somebody to spunk £25,000 and put them at huge risk and possibly cause, you know, a suicide in just a month that way. So, you know, really there are no winners. I find it frustrating. I find the short-term attitude frustrating, but I also find it frustrating that every time we quibble about the tiny details, we're the tobacco industry.
I can see the point you're making, but I do think also that it's, you know, the industry should be entitled to respond to, you know, the regulator putting out data which is saying, you know, a quarter of your customers are problem gamblers. Okay, they're not saying that. They're saying we should use the data with caution, etc. But that's sort of what the media are going to pick up on, and maybe the commission will tell them off. But you know, ultimately the regulators put this data out, and it does, you know, that does start to give the impression that it's like the tobacco industry. It's a product that a lot of people are suffering harm when using, whereas the you know, sort of the previous narrative was based on the fact that this is something that the vast majority of people can enjoy safely and should be entitled to do so. You know, the industry is now getting pushed into that category of, this is just an inherently harmful product that we need to start restricting. And if that narrative is based on inaccurate data, then, you know, I think that's something we're entitled to call out.
No, for sure. Absolutely. Of course. And I'm not suggesting that we can't do that. I'm merely saying that sometimes the focus appears to be fully in one direction when, you know, it's possible to multitask.
Agreed.
But, you know, if you want to say that you are the tobacco industry, Mel, that's fine.
I genuinely think it's a very different product.
Because it does cause cancer in everybody.
Going back to my previous point, with tobacco, you can restrict, people can try and smuggle it through customs and stuff, but you can't just go online and get access to unlimited cigarettes in the same way.
I can get you a website.
With gambling. So it's not something that, you know, with tobacco, we can say people who are currently under, you know, 18, whatever it is, are never going to be able to buy this product. We can't realistically do that with gambling.
Yeah, that's true.
But what's interesting, and you mentioned Sarah earlier on, Fintan, Sarah Ramanauskas, of course, friend of the podcast. And one of the things that Sarah's been talking about, particularly with the new project, is fundamentally, if you find that some of these products are more harmful, or that they are part of an environment which is more harmful, or are harmful in combination with things in a real world environment for a player, the simple truth is that these things can be re-engineered, or regulation can be improved to factor that in and to remove those harmful elements. So one of the things the industry could be doing is looking at these things and thinking, okay, what if we had to redesign? What if we had to redraw how these things work? What can we do? And that would be getting well ahead of the curve, because honestly, I kind of think that might be what's coming. Like, if I were a regulator now, I wouldn't be just going, oh, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. I'd be going, your products need to be thought out in a different way. And then it's not so much about a stake limit. It's a mathematical and mechanical difference in how things work. It's not impossible.
No, it's tough, but it's not impossible.
Well, regulation would be the only way that would happen, because nobody's doing that shit voluntarily, are they?
No, not even close. Not even close. But then we have the
risk sandwich. That if the problem gamblers are attracted. So, sorry, the commission say we should call them, maybe, is it people with problem gambling? Anyway, those people, if they're attracted to the more volatile products, the higher risk products, they're going to find those and use them in an unregulated environment. They're not going to use the tamer, potentially, products that regulation mandates. So that's what we always have to bear in mind in designing regulations, that if you made something completely safe with the aim of, you know, a noble aim of bringing problem gambling rates down to zero, you're just moving the people who enjoy a risky, unsafe product into an unregulated environment. So I don't think you can ever win on that.
Would Germany be an exhibit A for that, of trying to regulate the product into a
But there is a flip side to that, which is that you've also got to think about harm, the introduction of harm, the understanding. Because sometimes people, it's like when crime reporting happens, you know, that I've got a fly on my face. And so when crime reporting happens, journalists do not ever or very rarely reveal all of the details, because historically they were always asked not to, because the police didn't want people to get ideas. Because, you know, a lot of people lack the kind of imagination for the really evil shit until they, you know, learn it somewhere. You could be talking about a whole generation growing up with gambling that is not problematic. And that's what they see and what they learn. And I don't think I know that offshore would still be there and all of that.
You wander into your random Bitcoin exchange or something like that, and it's they'll just find it elsewhere. Like, there's
it's possible, but if you don't know it's there, you're not necessarily going to go and look for it. You see what I mean?
There's advertising. You can see online adverts for amazing bonus offers and big prizes and so on.
Any mobile game. Like, I've been playing some Supercell stuff with my son recently, and just like, I was so close to spending 100 euros on some fucking gems. I was this close. That's how good they are. It's loot boxes, basically slot machines and game mechanics, and the whole thing is just a slot machine. And we just give it to our kids while we eat our dinner at a restaurant for a bit of peace and quiet. It's just The problem with the casinos as they are right now are going to be really boring for the generation coming through. They're going to be like this is grandpa's casino. Like, if it's not, you look at the crash games and all that kind of stuff that's on the crypto sites now, it's at a level so far beyond a traditional online casino, which is what it is now. It's insane. It's like going from penny arcades to an online casino to the crypto casino type crash game type stuff, or what's happening in the mobile games. It's unbelievable, the difference. the kids coming through aren't going to be playing the casinos as we know them today. It's just too boring and too crap and too linear. It's really interesting.
Mm. It's a bit of a cliche by now, but we need to get the balance right.
I don't know.
The reason that I was thinking about that was I was thinking of the last government's attempted approach to smoking and constantly raise, and it was like such an absolute sort of thing. I mean, it doesn't take cigarettes out of the world. It just makes it a little bit harder for them to get. So it probably stops X percentage of people from entering that in the first place.
But then look at all the kids smoking triple mango flavored vapes or whatever it is.
Like, right, but vaping is a very different thing to smoking, and that's the point.
Technically and in theory, yes. But
no, in reality it is.
I'm sure the Chinese factory making the vape really cares about health and safety, and the nicotine levels are definitely what it says on the tin and not...
To be fair, the tobacco industry is extremely heavily regulated.
But the vapes aren't there, right? Isn't that the whole loophole?
I don't think there's any loophole with vaping as such. I mean, there are people doing dickish things, hence the whole popcorn lung thing in the US, which was just complete bollocks.
But that was just too much vaping. Like, that was just like, I'm constantly vaping. But like the elf bars and stuff.
No, see, this is the problem. It wasn't that, Fintan. It wasn't that at all. And yet that was wildly underreported. It was just, oh, people are dying from vaping. They're getting popcorn lung. It's, oh my God, huge panic. Absolute bollocks. Do you know what it was?
Oh, it was vitamin E or something in the thing.
No, not even that good. People were vaping cannabis concoctions.
Ah, that's the one.
And they had an additive that should never have been inhaled, and that fucked them up. And these were not licensed legal products in the US. They should never have been vaped. This is like some asshole in a shed making them. And so, you know, vaping, it gets really, really bad press. But actually, compared to smoking, it's not even in the same ballpark. It's not even close.
What?
And it's treated like it's this massive epidemic. Well, actually, vaping, when you take the tar and all of that shit out of smoking, it's essentially the same thing as a caffeine dependence. So it's a dependence rather than an addiction would be how it would be classified.
Really?
And nobody's going to be fucking hospitalized for vaping. I mean, unless you get the odd one that explodes, which obviously has happened. But for vaping itself, the act of it, because it's an extremely inefficient way to absorb nicotine. I mean, your lungs simply aren't built to inhale vapor. It just doesn't work. So it's highly inefficient. And it's the key part of it's just the nicotine, which, you know.
All right. So we've got a new headline. John endorses elf bars. Let's go.
John backs tobacco industry.
Big tobacco.
Bruford says to big tobacco, sponsorships are available.
We show up next week, like two Ferrari drivers, full head to toe Marlboro. All the patches.
I used to smoke Marlboro. I loved them. Big fan.
Cowboy.
Not anymore, obviously. Terrible. I read somewhere it's bad for you. But anyway, Mel, have you watched any of the recent episodes of Cobra Kai?
I still haven't watched that, I'm afraid.
Fucking hell. Have you, Fintan?
No. I've moved on, mate. I think it's time you move on as well.
I haven't watched it yet.
I tell you what it is. I kind of tuned out after a few seasons because it was getting into that real, like, if they all just spoke their minds or just like talked up all the had a chat, all the miscommunication. So it was one of those like classic just miscommunication storylines, and
which is almost all stories, really.
I just wasn't in the mood for that. I just couldn't be arsed. It's not what I need.
Okay, well, listen, what I'll do is I'll give you a bit of an update when I watch the new episodes.
did the guy fight the guy and there was a big thing and then they swapped sides and then they fought again and then they did the thing and then boof.
And you said you hadn't watched. You know it's going to be awesome.
It's, yeah. And the, oh, it'll obviously it'll finish with the big Valley High Kung Fu tournament, right? That's got to be the, I might just skip to the last episode and just do that one. Get it over.
I don't think you should if you think it's a Kung Fu tournament, Fenton.
Karate, Kung Fu, it's all the same.
Yeah, it is. So listen, just what... I've probably brought this up before. You know how Kung Fu originated?
No. Some, I don't know. Go on.
It was kind of a teaching aid, as bizarre as it sounds, right? So the world-renowned Shaolin monks, they had their young charges, and they were trying to teach them how to do, like, monk stuff. But, you know, getting them to sit down and focus, they were having an absolute nightmare. So they devised these movements and repetitious drills and stuff to burn their energy out in the mornings, and then they would teach them their theology, etc., in the afternoon.
Sounds,
and that's where it came from.
Sounds great.
It's fucking genius.
They should do that in schools to get the kids to do PE all morning, and then
that honestly, you'd actually do really, really well. Because that's, you know, when you got all the energy and you're young. Now, it'd probably be better if I did a bit of Kung Fu in the morning, probably then have a nap. Because I'm over 50 now.
I was going to say, you're 50.
It's a real thing. It's a real thing. Melanie Ellis of Northridge Law fame, thank you for joining us. And explaining stuff and putting me in my place, let's be fair.
Thanks, man.
Thank you for having me again.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just at Gambling Files. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.